Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation and such. Alright, so two slit stuff. I think we'll just go through all the differences between what I could have said 10 years ago and what I can say now about the experiment. I knew 10 years ago that, yes, a particle model could explain, but I didn't have as much ammunition in terms of being able to dissect what they were saying. And so mostly I focused on things like entanglement and superposition and, you know, photons, what slit they go through kind of stuff that didn't make any sense. And I knew didn't have anything to do with the observed pattern. All right, so I guess first maybe we'll look at this diagram. So this is a video that just, you know, this image shows. I haven't even played the whole video. It's only 4 minutes or something. 2 minutes. 2 minutes and 36 seconds, yeah, to explain the double slit experiment. It's ridiculous. But anyway, so they have plane waves coming in, one wave coming out, and somehow a pattern is created, right? Now, there's no reasoning for the pattern. There's no source of interference, so they're calling it something like a diffraction pattern. But there's absolutely no explanation for how this would create on and off pattern. So Professor Lewin, in contrast, says, what are you talking about? There's no difference. There's no diffraction pattern in the single slit, and then you call it an interference pattern in the double slit. They're both interference patterns, and they're caused by the same thing. Now, he blames Huygens and all that kind of nonsense, but anyway, just for illustration. Okay, and then the video I was intending to respond to is this one by Mike Young again. So he doesn't draw the plane waves coming in as straight lines, but he's doing the double slit, and he has, you can't quite see it in this image. I have to be over here. But yeah, he has two waves, you know, going through the openings, which mathematically, again, can't account for two patterns. Could only account for one of the patterns, those waves. You have to draw something else to account for the two patterns. So he says, okay, the double slit has a diffraction pattern built into it, and then an interference pattern. Like, these are somehow two different things. And of course, they're not two different things. They're just different, you know, separations of the same thing. They're big opening versus little opening, big distance versus little distance. So the big pattern is what a small distance creates. The little pattern is what a big distance creates. So that's first point. Okay, that there clearly the relationship is that simple. You're just talking about the distance between surfaces. And that's clearly what their math is obsessed with and concentrates on. And there really isn't anything more to it than just figuring out those distances and doing geometry. All right, so we'll get to some of that. All right, so the first thing to say, so this is all about wave-particle duality. I can quote Young saying the words in his, it's a video on the photoelectric effect. And so he's pointing out how the photons look like particles. And then he says, but we have the double slit experiment, which shows they are a wave. Well, that's not really what it shows. And it's not really if you describe it correctly. well, he says the words that a particle theory can't explain. That's it. You can't explain it. So they all use this rhetoric that there's no particle model that can explain. So let's just understand the difference between the wave, okay, and what a particle theory would predict. So if I had a wave coming out of something, okay, with these little peaks, I could duplicate exactly the same thing by just arguing that particles have a distance between them, okay, and they go into something, and now they're going to be scattered. So their little bits come in, and one could go this way, all right? And it's going to be in a certain position in time that will perfectly duplicate these wave fronts. So at any particular time, each one of these will be exactly on one of those branches. So if I had them scatter in these directions, they would duplicate, okay, in terms of being an on. I didn't draw that too perfectly, but you can get the idea. They'll match exactly because they have a distance from a center, okay, and the distance will be, they'll be exactly at these points at specific time. So we said this was 1 second, and this was 2 seconds and 3 seconds of distance. The particles would duplicate that in the sense they would be in those positions at that time. So if I had a continuous run of frequency coming in, you could understand that if it was here at 1 second, it would be here at 2 seconds, it'd be here at 3 seconds. And if it was continuous, then they would all be on at exactly those distance points. So it would duplicate the wave over time. So if I did tons and tons of photons coming in, I just scattered them, they would all be, a bunch of them here at this location, there'd be a bunch of them at this location, and there'd be a bunch of them at this location at one specific moment. At one specific moment, that's what they'd all look like. The next moment, they'd all be a little bit further down, you know, and the next moment, they'd be a little further down. So it would be imitate a wave, okay, in terms of this gross image. And you can do it just with scatter, just with the idea that at every moment in time, one of them gets shot out to a location, blah, blah, blah. And it would just, yes, scatter can create the same exact impact on a surface in terms of stuff will be hitting the surface where this hits, where this hits, where this hits, would be hitting at the same time that particles would hit. Okay, and scatter can duplicate it. Yeah, I can use the word perfectly. So there really isn't any wave-particle duality. There's still a clear option to choose. Okay, the particles can do exactly what the waves do, and there's no exclusion that the particles can't explain a frequency. Of course, particles can explain frequency, and that's all we're really talking about, is a wavefront created by a frequency. Particles can do that. All right, so that's, argument two. All right, I guess we could call this point number three, but whatever. Clearly you can see this, the central maxima, this central portion of light is much, much brighter, like 97% brighter than the other humps, the other on-off of the pattern. There's a similar type drawing here from Young, and when he does the actual experiment, which is quite a bit down here, you can see that in the image. Well, you could see it there. That the central portion of the light is much brighter than the periphery spots. Now, when you look at the pattern, it doesn't look that... The difference doesn't seem that stunning. Let's see, we have an image here somewhere. It's not a very good image, actually, so probably not worth the trouble. But I've drawn it, literally hundreds of times. All right, so let's just go back to this. Okay, so this idea that the light goes through the opening, and the opening is something to do with this experiment, and that's somehow creating the fringes, is just wrong. Okay, this really has nothing to do with the opening, because the opening is basically saying to you loud and clear, like in this image, obviously this piece, he redraws it, and this center peak is much higher, much more intensity, and he blames that on this diffraction pattern. Okay, but it doesn't need to be blamed on the diffraction pattern, because it happens with any one of these experiments when you have two surfaces. Because the point is that most of the light goes right through the opening. Now, if you did this with a single impediment experiment, then you won't get those intensities, because you're blocking the light that would go right through the center. And it becomes a single slit experiment. just like, except you blocked out all of that light going through the opening. So they really don't include the impediment experiment in this conversation, and often we'll just use the, you know, putting a single impediment in front. The single impediment has two surfaces, obviously. A single wire, all of that. And they call that a double slit because there's two openings on either side of the single impediment. But clearly they're not infinitesimally small openings. They're infinitely large openings. So you're missing the two other sources of fringe, which would be the surfaces you're not including, okay, in the experiment. So, you know, that doesn't work logically at all. All right. So we'll go back to drawing. All right. So just to understand, it's not about light going through something, because the light that goes through ends up right in the middle, where it doesn't get bent. That's the obvious implication of that stronger maxima in the center. Why does it exist? Well, it exists because the light isn't being bothered. It's just going straight through the experiment. So the only light you're getting from the fringes is the light, okay, that doesn't make it through the slit undisturbed. All right, so I've tried to emphasize that this is a surface experiment, okay? So you can have the single impediment experiment, you can have the single opening experiment. So those are your choices of experiments. And what they all have in common, or what you can all see in them, is it's just about surfaces. Two surfaces here, two surfaces here, and then four surfaces here. And so what's happening here isn't just one wave coming through the opening and doing something. What's clearly happening is that the photons near the surface are creating, which you could argue are waves, but again, I would just argue it can be explained as particle scatter, which is you're going to end up with, you know, timed events. The photons are coming in as timed events, and they're going to leave as timed events, okay, except they're going to leave and scattered, and the scatter can only rearrange in two ways, either in phase or out of phase. There is no third choice, and so that's why you have a 50-50 chance of reconstructing a photon. But you clearly have two sources, so the waves would have to, if they were going to draw the experiment accurately or fairly, they would have to draw it, okay, as, you know, the single slit would be the two surface experiment, and the waves would be right here on the surface. That's where the wave centers would have to be, and that's exactly, in the single slit they use A, okay, the letter A to describe this distance. All right, in the double slit they use the term D, okay, to describe what has to be to get the right answers. This distance, actually, okay, the furthest distance between the surfaces. They sometimes draw it as this distance, but again, remember, when they do this experiment, they use infinitesimally small slits, so it really wouldn't, this distance wouldn't be mathematically much different than this distance, because this total distance here isn't any more than a wavelength. It's a tiny amount of distance. But just understand, that's the mathematical trick, okay? So it's a D, the distance between the surfaces is a D in the double slit math, and it's an A in the single slit math. So, you know, all these years I had no idea what the hell they were doing, because, yeah, sometimes it was an A, sometimes it was a D in the math. Well, frankly, the math is really simple if you think about what it is as surfaces. And so if you think of, okay, this is a D distance because it's a single slit. I mean, an A. Sorry. Okay, there's a little A distance here and a little A distance here. There's an A distance here for the single impediment also. So that's the tricky part. Because this A isn't going to be the same as this A necessarily. And if they were treating it as a double slit, then this distance, you could argue, well, this distance would be a D distance. D's and A's look too much like each other, too. Another problem. And what I would argue is if you really think about what's really happening, the fact that the waves do have to be on the surface, the wave centers, because that's exactly what these distance assignments are basically saying, the distance between the wave centers. So if you're going to use a wave theory, the D or the A would have to be the distance to the center of the wave, right? The center of the wave. You're doing this. You're saying the wave is coming out. This is your center of the wave. That's where the two geometric triangles are going to be drawn from. Or more precisely, you could understand it that you're just going to take a point in space and you're basically drawing lines from four points in the double slit. And you're saying, basically, are they all in phase? That is, are they all one wavelength? Okay, one spot of distance, okay, where they're all the little, if I was to shoot them all at the same time, would they all hit here at the same time? Now the trick is these things really have to be more than one wavelength out of phase, because the idea is you want one to hit, and then a little tiny bit of time later, you want another one to hit, and then you want another one to hit. You don't want them all to hit at the same time. A photon isn't made by creating lots of things that hit at the same time. It's created by creating a frequency. This you need this wavelength. This is what makes a photon, is the wavelength. You have to have this distance between the hits. So it's obviously a timed event, and this whole object would be the photon. Now Einstein, I would say, if you made a mistake, Einstein could have figured this all out for you, made this video for you 50 years ago. If, well, 60 or whatever, if he had just kept in mind that the photon is made of these little parts, and the little parts are free. He knew they weren't bound to each other, but yet he always thought of the photon as this whole object, and the whole object had to move through space, when that's not what's happening. All you're doing is recreating the object by just creating bang, 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 a frequency, hitting a location. All right. And so, so maybe I'll redraw so I have more space here so I can make my other point. All right, we'll do that. I'll erase. All right, so, in the end, we're just trying to, again, do this thing from two locations. You're just drawing lines. Theoretically, okay, and you're just saying where they intersect, where I can make a line from one point to another point, is it a full wavelength of difference? That is the arrival time, okay, a full wavelength of time different? And I'm arguing, obviously, that you really want this bit to be here when this bit is here, okay, and say a third bit would be coming in and hit here. So you want the timing, okay, of the photon to recreate the frequency. But the point is this is the geometry. So they just make a base of a triangle, that's the D they're using, and then you just draw the triangle to any location. You just pick a location and you just draw your triangle. All right, so the thing, the key observation I've finally made, was just understanding that you're really talking about something that's happening on an arc, okay? It doesn't happen on an infinite line or an infinite plane. It happens on an arc of distance, okay? You have a distance between you and the target. That distance has to stay the same for your math to be rational. So obviously the L distance, you usually use the L, is, an arc. And then if you think about the arc and you think about, okay, I'm going to take two point sources or a distance. So even if I was doing a single slit and I had an A for the distance or the D for the distance, doesn't matter. You can understand that there's the difference for all the triangles are going to be using the same base. Okay, the same distance is the base for all the triangles I could possibly draw. And the triangle that illustrates the distance difference the most is this triangle. Okay, so a triangle that seems implausible to even draw because it's a zero volume triangle essentially. That's interesting. Somehow that doesn't write on this surface. It's always some kind of bullshit. Shit, complication. Yeah, I don't know what that is exactly. These do not like what I cleaned with. Anyway, so you can see that the difference is this little difference right here. Okay. And you can't make it any bigger. So let's say if I did have a slit that was less than a wavelength of light. This is the maximum triangle. This triangle will have the most distance. Every other triangle I draw, so all the other triangles I might attempt to draw, will have less, okay, difference in the length of the line. I can't get more, the two sides of the triangle to have more length than this. And it wouldn't matter how long I make these lines. I could go infinite length of line. I could go an infinite distance. And I still, with this base, I can't make a wavelength of difference in these two lines. This hypotenuse can't gain on this side. So I can never create a wavelength of difference because I don't have enough base to do it. Because this is the maximum difference. I can't get any more difference in the length of the lines than doing this horizontal thing. That's the maximum amount of difference. And because I've made this less than a wavelength of light difference, I can't possibly have any interference pattern. I can't have constructive and destructive because I can't create wavelengths of difference. All right. And so thinking, understanding that point gets you to realize that this is all it's about, is this line and how many wavelengths fit in here. How many times can I fit a wavelength in here? So if I make the slits wider and wider, that is, I don't do what they say. I don't do the Young double slit drawing, which is infinitesimally small slits, right? So small, you wouldn't even be able, you can barely see them with your naked eye. They're so small. And the whole point is, well, I basically eliminated them as point sources. When I put the two points so close to each other, you can't see that it's two points anymore, right? So I can put two points on this board, and there's a point where you won't be able to tell that it's two separate dots. And that's essentially what you're doing when you make infinitesimally small openings, is you're basically saying there is no difference between the two. The base of the triangle has no, it doesn't have enough, there's not enough distance in the base of the triangle for me to make two lines that have a wavelength of difference because I don't have enough base in the triangle. I can't possibly have a wavelength of difference if the two points are that close together. All right, so the whole point is that all you're really looking for is distance between surfaces. So that's the key to this whole experiment. So there's no bigger point I could make in terms of saying their physics hasn't given you the right answer. No, the right answer to understand any of these experiments is just understand the surfaces are the point sources. That's the key to the whole thing. The surfaces are where the diffraction, all the diffraction comes from the surfaces. So all the fringe pattern, all of it is created at the surfaces. And all you're really doing is saying, if I have little bars of light, then I know there has to be a big surface, right? Look, I mean, a big distance. If I have 50 or 100 of these little bars in the pattern, I know that has to be at least 100 wavelengths of difference somewhere. Somewhere there has to be 100 wavelengths of difference in the experiment that produced it for there to be that outcome. Now the obvious point I'm making is that yes, in the double slit you have this distance between these two furthest away surfaces. That would account for the little bars. And then you have these smaller distances. It could be this one or it could be this one, depending on how big your slits are versus your opening. But there's a smallest distance somewhere in the experiment, okay, and that's going to decide the envelope pattern. So if I had a pattern, you can't see that. I draw it in here. So I have a pattern. All right. So it has the envelope, okay, and then it starts up again. And what you could see in Mike Young's experiment, all right, was that you could actually see the missing bar. So this spot here where there's an X, you could actually see it. It was just very, very dim. So you have a grouping, Now, this grouping is always an odd number. I just drew it as an even one. But this is always an odd number because what's happening is actually there's two separate slit experiments happening in the double slit. And what you're basically done, whenever you have two points, two separate points, you're basically doing the experiment from their perspective. From this point and from this point, you're going to do two separate interference patterns, essentially. And so what you're really doing is creating two different patterns. And what happens in the center is you're taking two of these nodes that would be the same size, and you're basically combining them. All right, so I'll clear the board so this is more easily seen. All right, I'm back. All right, so, right, well, quick drawing of the pattern, right? I shouldn't have done that. Right. So, again, in the double slit, this center will always have an odd number in it. All right, and then you'll have it off, and then you'll have what'll be a division of that, this, basically half of those, right? So if you took the odd number and you said, well, go one higher, so 5 would be 6, half of 6 is 3. All right, that'll be consistent in your outcome. All right, so when you do the double slit with a proper slit that gives you a nice pattern, this is what you'll see, basically. Is that the nodes are 3 of the things inside. Okay, so even numbers out here, odd number here. And what's happening with the odd number is basically these nodes, you know, this size object, the two of them are basically overlapping. And that's why it's a double maxima in the center. And then you have a node here and a node here. Because you do have two sources, right? So you have two sources. The two sources are creating two separate patterns, two separate distance patterns. So the thing to understand is you have a distance to the target. If you take that distance and move it over here, okay, and now you can understand that this is your wavelength of difference, right? I mean, these are your difference between your hypotenuse, your two geometric lines. This is your distance. You can understand that if this distance, okay, comes out, like say I divide the wavelength of the light into this distance and I end up with a non-whole number, that is, it doesn't fit, the wavelength doesn't fit without leaving a remainder, so I come up with a number like 15 1/2, then you would know this is an off. So you know that this is no light because it's 15 1/2 wavelengths. It's not 16 wavelengths or, you know, 15 wavelengths or 14 whole wavelengths. There's a remainder, and if the remainder is 0.5, you know this is an off. So then you know this has to be an on, and so you can sort of figure out that even though they think I draw these two lines equidistant, okay, this has to be an on in the center. No, it doesn't. Okay, because that's only for inside of this tiny distance. This distance is only, you know, it's much less than half of a millimeter traditionally. So it's a half millimeter or less, this distance between the two surfaces. So inside of that tiny distance, it's an on. But out here, it could be an off. Or over here, it could be an off. So that's the blending of these two patterns, is you can't tell how far this one's going to overlap that one. This one could overlap a little bit, it could overlap a lot. Okay, and that's the key, because it starts here and goes up. This is the one you can be sure of, because this is a guaranteed distance. You know, it's this distance. And so if you have an even number, you know this is an on. And now you know that's the center of an on. You know the next on has to be here. The next on will be here. You're kind of obligated to have an on or an off here in the center. So they're either a tiny bit of distance away from each other or they're overlapping. All right. So that accounts for the double maxima. And, you know, these little spots are still here. There's still light hitting them. It's just much less light, and the difference is that how many sources are contributing. So in the double slit, you have four sources, all right? Make lines for the sources. And all you're really saying is at any location are all four sources in phase. That is, if all four sources are a wavelength, you know, on the same distance wavelength in phase, then all those four sources will be making contributions that create the proper frequency at that location, and you have a photon. If two of the sources are in phase and the other two aren't, then you have the very, very dim point. And so there's only these certain points where you can find that you have the place where you have all four sources. Now, the interesting feature is the pattern basically tells you the relationship in terms of distance. So depending on how many bars there are inside of this envelope pattern, that's basically telling you the relationship between how many wavelengths of difference there are between your point sources. So it basically is telling you, the slit ratio. So if you have, 15 wavelengths of difference between, between these two, between two of this, draw it this way, so you get it. All right, this is the other surface. All right. So if you have 15 wavelengths here, the ratio is that this distance plus this distance is what this bigger distance will be. So this bigger distance will be 15. Let's say this was 30. Okay, and this was another 15 for this other opening. Well, now I have 60. So 15 divided by 6, as a ratio to 60. Okay, and I can say, well, that's 5, right? 15, no, it's 4. Yeah, 4. So it'll tell me that it'll be a 4-to-1 relationship. And so what I'm going to see inside of this double maxima, okay, is going to be 7. So if I have 7 bars in the maxima, I know that the ratio between the slits width and the smallest width and the largest width between two surfaces, the smallest distance versus the biggest distance between two surfaces, that ratio, okay, is exactly revealed here, is that you have a 1, okay, for the node, and you have the how many bars are inside the node is telling you the relationship between the distances. So, the particle model completely explains the phenomenon. No problems. There's nothing that doesn't fit. You have a 50, you're throwing things at a timed interval. You have a 50-50 chance that when you're hitting a location, you're either going in phase, that is, you're getting closer to being a full wavelength, or you're getting a further away from being a full wavelength. It's a 50-50 chance. So you're either going to remake a photon or you're not going to. And so here you don't make a photon, here you do, because you create the right frequency. So in one place it's dot, 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 and in another place you get dot, dot, dot. You get the even distance between them versus the uneven distance between them. This is no photon, this will be a photon. All right. I think that's almost all of it, so I'll think and see if there's anything else I need to point out. But the experiment's really geometrically so simple, they've made it all mysterious and complicated. It's just about point sources as the source. If you want to believe in a wave theory, you have to put your waves on the surface. Now, I'd argue it doesn't make any sense, but that's where they have to go. All right. And then you can do your geometry. But see, they never draw the math that they show you. So they'll show you mathematics, but if they drew the math, they'd have to admit that, we're using this distance, the distance between the surfaces. That's where the center of the waves are, at those distances. And so they'd have to draw it a lot different than they draw it, because that's not the distance they're using in their math. And certainly won't be the distance that'll get the right answer. If he actually did do the distance between the middle of this slit and the middle of this slit, and he used openings that were large, he wouldn't get right answers. He wouldn't predict the right location for the bars of light. But they never do that experiment. They never do that correlation. That combination of math and drawings. Alright, so I guess I'll just add a simple description of cause, okay, just so it's understood. So again, the argument is that the photon is traveling through space. Now the fact is it also has a polarization, but we won't get into that. We'll just deal with the frequency part. So it's objects flying, okay, at a constant speed, okay, the speed of light at a distance. And that doesn't change. So they can travel billions of light years, and they'll maintain this distance between them. That will be their wavelength, and it's just really their frequency. Okay. The idea is when a slit experiment takes place, there's pieces of light that go straight through an opening, and then there's pieces that travel near the surface. And near the surface are electrons, okay, bigger objects. And they're going to hit the electrons. Now, the electrons are doing, you could sort of understand that when a surface exists, what the electrons are really doing, if when they're moving, they're jiggling this way and this way primarily. They're not going this way and this way much. They're going up and back and forth a lot on the surface. That's where the pressure is, the pressure differential. And so basically, one of these little quantas of energy hits an electron, okay, so there's the electron, the little bit is going this way. The electron has motion this way, the photon has its velocity this way, and you can sort of understand what's going to happen is the electron's going to move in some kind of other direction. And that direction essentially is when the electron moves, it's pushing photons in the direction it moves. So it's going to recreate a photon, an element, a quanta of pressure in that direction that it's now moving. So instead of pushing light this way, or quanta, it's going to be pushing it this way. And it's going to be pushing it with the velocity it got from the little bit of light. So the idea would be is that the surface is just percolating, okay, depending on the speed of each individual electron. Depending on how fast this electron is jiggling, will decide how much bending the photon got. Now it can hit two electrons, you know, one jiggling out and one jiggling in, and then two ones that were going out, and so that's why you get, you know, the possibility of creating photons at these higher and higher angles. But the argument is as the experiment demonstrates, the intensity of the light diminishes the further away. You know, the more bending, the fewer photons. So it's less and less likely that a photon is going to be bent, you know, horizontally to the experiment. Tangential to it, perpendicular to it. Alright, so that's the real causal mechanism. There's no wave things, there's no any of that stuff. It's just that some of the energy that is photons, some of these little tiny bits of stuff moving in this direction interact with electrons on the surface. The electrons change their direction, which changes the direction of that little bit. And obviously, each change is going to be unique to the electron, where, you know, how fast it was going. It's like when you launch something into gravity, high velocity where you launch it, very slow velocity at the end. So if I hit something, if I hit something that's launching here, I'll make more of a curve in it than if I hit it way up here. You can sort of understand, because this, it has more energy in this position than it's going to have at this position, because it's almost stopping as I throw it into gravity. Same thing happened to your electron. Electron's moving, but it moves very fast at the beginning and then very slow at the end. So there's very little. You know, the photon can have a big effect on direction up here because this is moving very little, and very little effect on direction down here because this is moving a lot. It has a high velocity. So depending on the velocity of the electron it hits, okay, that'll decide how much it bends, and that's why you get this basic scatter pattern. So the whole thing is just, can be explained as just scatter. And you can sort of understand how scatter, okay, a bunch of rays shooting out of something could look like a wave. I mean, it's pretty obvious how it could look like a wave. And I would argue that all of Maxwell's drawings of charge demonstrate the same thing. He draws a bunch of straight lines, yet people treat that as if those straight lines represent waves, when they just represent, at any specific time, a distance between the particle. It was here, and then 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 it was here. In any timed interval, I could just do this. I can make it look like a wave, but it's not waving. It's just a frequency. All right, I think that's enough. Yeah, that's enough of the story. So the highest distance you can find in the experiment between two surfaces is creating the smallest pattern. The closest distance between two surfaces is creating the biggest pattern in the double slit. And the rest of the single slits are kind of almost self-explanatory in the sense it's just two point sources at a distance. So you do the single impediment, it's two surfaces. You do the single opening, it's two surfaces. And that's why there's two sources. So you could call it the two surface experiment and the four surface experiment, or you could call them more precisely and correctly the single slit is the two-source experiment. The double slit is the four-source experiment. And then you can add more and more slits, and you're just counting how many surfaces you're creating. The surfaces create the fringes. Period. Fact. And such. All right, so I think that's enough. Should be. All right, so we'll get rid of that, and we don't need this anymore. So I might play some of this at some point, but there's no real point because, again, it's a fake drawing. The idea of a diffraction pattern versus an interference pattern, you know, this being a diffraction pattern and this being an interference pattern, as Professor Lewin says, no. Why two different? There's not two different concepts in play here. If you have an on-off pattern, it's being created by interference. And I would just change that rhetoric to, you break a photon and then you remake a photon. There's no constructive and destructive interference. There's just scattering photons and then remaking photons. All right. So, till the next time and such. And so forth and whatnot. We'll get rid of that. And I guess we'll get rid of me. Alright, so enough of the video. Till the next time and such. How come I didn't disappear? Oh, I did there. Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of strange. I'm not supposed to just disappear. I'm supposed to fade away. That's kind of funny. It's not working. Fade. There it goes. Look at that. It's working properly. Okay, it doesn't make much of a difference, but, you know, all that little shit counts a little bit. All right, maybe it doesn't. It doesn't to anybody with a brain, but anyway. An awful lot of the audience doesn't have a brain, apparently, so. They need little tricks. They need little pieces of bullshit to cheer them. Pathetic, really. So, yeah, the video's over. It really is. I just haven't hit the button yet. Okay, I'll hit it now. Yeah, there. That's a good time to hit it.